Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Who said there are no second acts in American lives? Mark Sanford is back on the ballot. Tiger Woods is number one in golf. And another man is considering coming back to public life after making his own last name a synonym for private parts. Oh, wait, it already was. We'll ask who won't go away. Plus, food writer Mark Bittman comes on to tell us what to put in our mouths. And Carl Castle, well, I don't know for sure, but I think he's trying to convince me to go get another job.
Dude, you'd be a great mayor or something.
We'll ask who's really reaching for the stars from the gutter on our quiz coming up right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. The United States and Japan today propose new talks with North Korea on its nuclear and missile programs, but said Pyongyang must first honor previous agreements and lower tensions on the peninsula. The offer came in Tokyo, where Secretary of State John Kerry met with Japanese officials. Kerry said North Korea will find a partner in the U.S. if it takes steps towards giving up its nuclear program.
We are confident that we can address the concerns with respect to their security and find ways together with China and the Republic of Korea and Japan and Russia and the members of the six-party talks.
Kerry also vowed that U.S. will protect its allies.
We can find a way to resolve these differences at a negotiating table.
Kerry also vowed the U.S. will protect its allies against any provocative acts by the North. Voters are going to the polls in Venezuela today to decide who will lead that country after larger-than-life President Hugo Chavez. NPR's Juan Ferrero says Chavez's heir apparent has been leading in the polls.
Bugles sounded before dawn in the poor slums of the capital, and Chavistas, those who were loyal to the late president, hit the streets to vote. The election pits interim president Nicolas Maduro against Enrique Capriles. He's an upstart governor who says Chavez mismanaged the country in 14 stormy years in office. The government has the upper hand, the sympathy vote helps Maduro, and the government has a vast media apparatus that has been providing positive coverage of Maduro since Chavez died on March 5th. Whoever wins will face a range of challenges. Venezuela suffers from rampant crime and food shortages. Inflation is among the highest in the world, and many cities face daily blackouts. Juan Ferrero, NPR News, Caracas.
China is reporting more cases of humans infected with a new strain of bird flu. The official news agency reports at least 60 cases. 13 people have died. NPR's Jim Hawk reports.
Two people in a central Chinese province have been infected by the H7N9 virus, the first cases found in the region. 11 people have died out of the 51 cases now identified. Earlier, health authorities confirmed that a 7-year-old child in the capital of Beijing had been infected by the new bird flu virus, the first case to be reported outside of eastern China. Authorities say there is still no indication of human-to-human transmission of the virus. Just in case, U.S. labs are using a new, faster approach to develop a vaccine, testing a seed strain of the virus made from the genetic code already posted on the internet. Jim Hawk, NPR News.
Senator Marco Rubio appeared on 5 talk shows today to talk about proposals to overhaul the nation's immigration laws. He's a member of a bipartisan group drafting a bill. He said the plan will not include a provision to give amnesty to people in the U.S. illegally. This is NPR News. The Senate may vote as early as Wednesday on a bill to expand background checks on gun buyers to include gun shows and internet sales. Republican Senator John McCain told CNN he is now leaning towards supporting the bill. For the rest of the month, NASA engineers will be unable to send radio signals to the space agency's probes on and around Mars. NPR's Joe Palco explains.
Approximately once every 2 years, the orbits of Earth and Mars are such that the Sun lies directly between the two planets. When that happens, radio signals can't be sent reliably for about a month. So the two orbiters, Mars Odyssey and Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, and the two landers, Opportunity and Curiosity, are on their own. They will continue to operate, but will have to record any data they collect and forward that to Earth in May when communications are restored. Meanwhile, engineers continue to ready NASA's next mission to the Red Planet, an orbiter called MAVEN. MAVEN is scheduled to launch next November. Once it arrives at Mars, it will study the Martian atmosphere. Joe Palca, NPR News, Washington.
Tomorrow is tax day, and as people work on their forms, they might be thinking, what are the odds I'll be audited? The National Taxpayer Advocate looked at that question. It's an independent office located within the Internal Revenue Service. It says the IRS finds more tax cheats who run small businesses in or near Los Angeles, San Francisco, Houston, Atlanta, and the District of Columbia. So that's where it targets taxpayers for audits. The study also found that people who own construction companies or real estate rental firms are more likely to cheat than in other fields. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Esurance, an Allstate company, born online and offering tools and resources for drivers to make decisions about their car insurance at esurance.com.
Greg Cott here with my Sound Opinions co-host Jim DeRogatis, who recently made an important announcement.
I'm going to say this right now. I have not seen a more galvanizing or gripping rock and roll front person since Kurt Cobain more than two decades ago.
Who is this singer? And has Jim lost his mind? You be the judge, because on Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic.
Sunday evenings at 7.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. We've got a great show for you today. We've got food writer Mark Bittman coming on later to play our game. But first, big news this week about Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell's office being bugged. Maybe you heard the tape of his staff making fun of potential Democratic challenger Ashley Judd. Well, yeah, of course, this paled in comparison to the other bugging scandal this week, the NPR bugging scandal. For the first time on this show today, we're ready to release the tape of the wiretap we placed on Terry Gross's phone.
See, here's the thing about Sagal. Carl Castle has been carrying that guy for years. Sagal wouldn't know a limerick if it walked right up and bit him in the Wait, wait, don't tell me? More like, wait, wait, don't turn on the radio when that is on. Anyway, good talking to you, Ira.
Well, if you've got anything you'd like to say for everyone to hear, give us a call. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jen from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hey, how are things in Grand Rapids?
Cold and rainy, but otherwise fabulous.
Well, yeah, I bet. What do you do there?
I'm a temp at the Gerald Ford Presidential Museum.
The Gerald Ford Presidential Museum.
Indeed.
I bet a lot of people did not realize there was one.
Yes, there is. There's two.
There are two presidential libraries for Gerald Ford?
Well, there's the library in Ann Arbor and then the museum in Grand Rapids.
Right. And what sort of things do they have there at the Gerald Ford Museum?
Well, they have Nixon's resignation letter.
Oh. Shouldn't that be in the Nixon Museum?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, Jen, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, it's a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning. Ms. Faith Saley is here.
Hi, Jen.
Next, it's the comedian and host of the Who's Paying Attention podcast, Mr. Alonzo Bowden is here.
Hello.
Hello.
Finally, it's the host of the podcast that is taking over the known world, Too Beautiful to Live. It's Luke Burbank.
Hiya, Jen.
Hi.
Jen, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, of course, is going to recreate for you three quotations in the week's news. You know the drill. Explain or identify two of them. Do that. You'll win his voice, and it will go wherever you want. Ready to play?
I am.
Here's your first quote.
If you want anything said, ask a man. If you want anything done,
asked a woman.
That was a woman who lived out of that credo. She did a lot before she died this week at the age of 87. Who was it?
Margaret Thatcher.
Yes, indeed. Margaret Thatcher. Baroness Thatcher.
Can I just say that Carl sounded exactly like Meryl Streep there?
He did. A lot of people found out about Miss Thatcher's passing on social media. The hashtag #NowThatcherIsDead began trending. And people got really upset when they saw it because it was all squeezed together like a hashtag. It could also be read as #NowThatShare'sDead. So a lot of people were upset about Margaret Thatcher passing. A lot of other people getting upset about Cher's passing, which wasn't true.
How did Cher feel about it?
Cher was, I think, moderately perturbed, but flattered that people cared. And when you think about it, the two groups joined together because they had so much in common. Both women had opinions about gypsies, tramps, and thieves. And, of course, both had very short-lived marriages with Greg Allman. By coincidence.
A lot of it gets left out of Margaret Thatcher's history.
It's
time
true.
With Greg Allman.
It's true. Well, a lot of people, I mean, it's interesting. She was quite revered in America because she was such a, you know, a pioneering figure. But in Britain, she had a tremendous amount of split opinion about her. In fact,
still is, right?
Yeah, still is. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the people, the punk rockers who were protesting her back in the 80s when she was in power came out to, you know, show their anger now that she's died. And so they were having celebrations all over London. It's kind of hard to still be a punk this many years later. I mean, mohawks aren't as intimidating when it's just your comb-over dyed purple. Your next quote is from a man named Jason Weiner. He was speaking to his brother.
Dude, you'd be a great mayor or something.
This week, Jason Weiner's brother said he's considering a return to politics. Who is he?
I don't know.
Well, his last name is Weiner.
Oh. That was it. A governor?
It wasn't. It wasn't just his name. It was his. It was the cause of his fall from grace.
Yeah. That he tweeted the picture of.
Yes,
yeah.
He did.
Was it Andrew?
Oh, close enough. It's Anthony Weiner. You know who he is. Anthony Weiner. You can only imagine what's going to be in the Anthony Weiner Museum someday. It's been 2 years since Anthony Weiner's political career was destroyed by Anthony's Weiner. But thanks to an 8,000-word profile in the New York Times Magazine, we now know we may not have seen the last of him. The piece is worth a read, if only because the author of the article uses the phrase Clintonian rise when talking about Anthony Weiner without cracking up.
This brother, Jason Weiner,
yeah,
sounds like he's the Billy Carter of this relationship. He also said that,
yes,
his brother's a lot less douchey.
Well, what
now.
He said was he was talking about how Anthony Weiner, because if you may remember that he was a congressman, he was very brash, he was very outspoken, he was constantly on cable news and the floor of the House, berating people and condemning his enemies and so on and so forth. And he's been humbled. And he's changed, and his brother says, quote, there was definitely a douchiness about him I just don't really see anymore, unquote. So it's not exactly Old Hickory or the Great Communicator, but slightly less douchey has some punch, I guess.
Could be a slogan.
What bigger endorsement do you need if you're going to be a mayor or something? Then he's less douchey than he used to be.
Yeah.
Doesn't it
I'm
also
just thinking, what was his level of douchiness then?
Yeah.
I mean, to say he's less douchey now, well, yeah.
Is there a recovery program for douches?
Oh, no doubt.
Like a 12 steps?
Listen,
like,
Tiger had to go through his sexual
Elliot
rehab,
Spitzer?
And
Elliot
he's
Spitzer?
Number one again, so douchey rehab might improve your life.
Yeah. All right, Jen, here is your last quote.
I'm just a white man coming to you from the Southland.
Those are the lyrics to a new song by Brad Paisley. It's called Accidental Racist, and it made headlines this week because, accidentally or not, it seems to be pretty darn what?
Racist?
Yes. The song starts with Paisley addressing the man serving him at Starbucks, saying he hopes he's not offended by his Confederate flag shirt. He's not wearing it because he's racist. He's just, quote, caught between Southern pride and Southern blame, unquote. Now, before you say Brad Paisley is just some obtuse white guy, he has LL Cool J come in and rap in the song. Yep, Brad Paisley is basically saying, some of my best friends are LL Cool J.
And does LL Cool J say, don't be offended by my fist in your face?
Something, no. Yeah.
He kind of does a little bit.
Yeah.
He basically says, and my problem with the song is,
is that LL Cool J does this rap that basically says, I'll forgive your Confederate flag, which is, a lot of people would say, a sign of the subjugation of a ton of people. And he says, if you forgive me for wearing a do-rag, which is just like a basically a headwear choice.
Yeah.
And that's the moral equivalency that I don't really get. It's sort of like everybody made some mistakes.
Sure.
We all got out of hand. I'm like, I think most of the mistakes were by the people who owned other people.
Yeah.
That seems like the majority of the mistakes were on that side of the ledger.
Yeah.
Yeah, LL, I mean, that's what he's saying. He's like, okay, you can't prejudge me for wearing saggy pants or a do-rag, and I won't prejudge you for wearing a Confederate shirt. But, you know, like, it's easy for LL to say that because he's like 6'6", 240, solid muscle.
Yeah.
I forgive him for a lot.
Exactly.
I'm like, if his pants want to sag, that's okay with
yeah.
me. But if I see a little white guy in a Confederate shirt, we're going to have a problem.
I understand.
Carl, how did Jen do in our quiz?
Jen, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Congratulations, Jen.
Not everything we've done.
I'll forget the iron chain.
It ain't like you and me can rewrite history.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium. And I want to tell you about the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me movie event on May 2nd. We will be beaming our show live into movie theaters across the country. For tickets and more information, go to waitwaittickets.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Faith, this week we read about a business in North Carolina that unveiled a new slogan and immediately generated all sorts of complaints. The slogan was, cheat death. What was the business?
All right. Well, if it were cheat age, it would be a plastic surgeon.
Right, but it isn't.
Cheat death. Is it a medical establishment?
It is indeed.
It's a hospital.
It is a hospital,
okay.
Yes.
Phew.
Hospitals, like any business, are trying to attract new customers. That's why New Claremont Regional Medical Center recently underwent a PR overhaul. On Tuesday, the hospital unveiled its new slogan, Cheat Death. On Wednesday, locals were threatening to take their dying elsewhere. The marketing firm hired to overhaul the hospital's image admits it should have gone with one of its other plans to bring in new patients, such as putting smallpox virus in the water.
But isn't that the hospital you would go to? Like if you have an emergency, like, I want to go to the place that cheats death.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to the place that gives death a fair shot.
That's true. It's kind of...
I don't want to give death an even chance. If you're willing to bend the rules, I'll go with you. Let's cheat on this one and get honest somewhere else.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur Language Programs, celebrating 50 years in 2013 and offering portable audio courses in 50 languages. Pimsleur.com. RDO, a digital music service allowing listeners to discover millions of songs and listen everywhere. RDIO.com. Esurance, an Allstate company, born online and offering tools and resources for drivers to make decisions about their car insurance at esurance.com. And Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Alonzo Bowden, Luke Burbank, and Faith Saley. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
And who are you?
I'm Susan Eisman-Levitin.
Hi, Susan Eisman-Levitin.
And I live in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester? We got some Worcesterites here.
Yeah, well, but I grew up in Milwaukee, so I don't say Worcester.
You don't say Worcester?
No. I do say Milwaukee without an L, but I don't say Worcester.
Milwaukee, but not Worcester. I understand. Yeah. Susan, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Susan's topic?
I was into that before it was cool.
Hipsters specialize in declaring that what isn't cool is, and that what is cool isn't. That's how they've brought back handlebar mustaches and unemployment. Well, they've done it again. Our panelists are going to tell you about three surprising new hipster trends. Guess the real story, you'll win Carl's ironic voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. And hipsters all have answering machines with reel-to-reel tape. All right, ready to play, Susan?
Sure.
First, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
It was a busy Thursday in Portland's Hawthorne neighborhood when 26-year-old Alyssa Cleven was riding her bicycle. You know, the kind with one giant front wheel. To her job as a coffee stylist slash DJ at Stumptown Espresso, when she inadvertently plowed into Brian Buckaloo, a professional beard competition judge slash small batch vodka distiller slash DJ, who was waiting to cross Burnside. The grisly part is that the crash sent the contents of the baby Bjorn that Buckaloo had been wearing all over the street. The less grisly part is that those contents were just some organic kohlrabi he'd picked up at the farmer's market. Oh, this is what I carry everything in, said Buckaloo, referring to the fabric baby-carrying pouch that now hung slack around his tiny cut-off jean shorts. Same with all my friends. We used to go see these secret shows at a Babies R Us, where bands would, like, play just using the toy instruments. And my buddy Atticus, he saw one of these baby Bjorns, and he put it on, and he was all like, wouldn't it be funny if I wore this, but, like, for real? So 23 of us bought one. Anyway, it's totally the new fanny pack, which was the new backpack. But we're going to have to stop wearing them, said a forlorn Buckaloo, picking up his produce. More and more parents are copying us by wearing them to carry, like, babies. And I mean totally unironically. What is happening to this neighborhood?
Hipsters using baby Bjorns as their new knapsacks. Your next story about kids and their crazy ideas comes from Alonzo Bowden.
The latest trend amongst hipsters, not doing it yourself. That is, if you're talking about answering your phone. These days, you're no one if you don't have someone. That's someone being an administrative assistant or what we used to call secretaries. Problem? Humans are expensive. The hipster answer is simply to assist each other. Go into any vegan cafe in Brooklyn and find a table full of hipsters. You'll notice all the phones are sitting in the center of the table. Listen closely and you'll hear them answering for each other. Of course, problems do arise, like when your friend slash assistant isn't around or might even be working somewhere. Who answers your phone? Well, a barrister named Elisa told New York Magazine, then you let it go to voicemail. I had my friend Dallas record a message saying we were all on a staff retreat. I have another phone which I'll actually answer, and most of the time I have Terry's phone, so I have to remember if I'm me or if I'm Terry's assistant. Then I have another phone which I only use to answer Patrick's emails.
Hipsters taking turns answering each other's phone. And your last story about a ridiculous trend comes from Faith Salick.
Being a hipster takes a lot of effort, not just to find new things to pickle or to sharpen your pencil artisanally or to name your twins Betty and Silas. A hipster must tirelessly stake out the new by embracing the old, which is why bingo is the cool and hot pastime for hipsters too lazy for parkour. Just ask Billy Corgan, the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins and owner of Madame Zuzu's Tea Salon in Chicago. But hipsters beyond the Windy City are also playing what's not your grandma's bingo. There's bingo and bourbon, drag bingo, and cosmic bingo conducted under blacklight. Why are hipsters attracted to balls in a cage? Corrigan says, quote, our lives at this point are speeding up. It's so nice to go back to the way things used to be. Smashing Pumpkins bassist Nicole Fiorentino agrees that it feels, quote, old-timey. Other old-timey things under consideration for hipster sanction include women pretending to wear pantyhose by drawing seams down the backs of their calves and wet nursing.
All right, here are your three choices. Somewhere, somebody in skinny jeans is doing one of these things. Is it from Luke Burbank wearing a baby Bjorn as a knapsack to carry around their artisanal food? From Alonzo Bowden answering each other's phone to give the illusion that they're all busy and have personal assistants? Or from Faith Saley playing bingo, but of course in a hip, ironic way? Which of these is the real story of a hipster trend?
Boy, I am torn between the bingo and the phone answering, because those I could so see the 30-somethings I know doing. I think that it's bingo.
You're going to go for bingo, Faith's story
yep.
of the hip bingo parlors.
Yes.
Well, we actually spoke to somebody who was involved in this hip new trend.
This is legendary newscaster Bill Curtis with a new career as bingo caller.
That's true. Yeah. Bill's been calling bingo for hipster bingo parties. Obviously, Faith had the real story, and you got it right, Susan, by picking her. Congratulations. Carl Castle, we'll record the greeting on your home voicemail, whatever you got. Thanks so much for playing with us today.
Thanks,
Susan. Thank you.
And now the game where we ask somebody who knows a lot to answer questions about something else. Mark Bittman isn't a celebrity chef. He doesn't own a famous restaurant. He doesn't even have a cooking show. But he wrote what must be the most popular cookbook in America right now, called How to Cook Everything. Almost everybody has it, and when they take out their copy, it falls open to the page that explains how to boil water. Mark Bittman, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It is true. You probably are the most popular cookbook author in America right now, just by the ubiquity of How to Cook Everything and its related books. But you didn't even start out being a chef, right?
No, I started out being a writer.
Right. And the story was that you started in the food industry as a restaurant critic?
Well, I actually started in the food industry as a cab driver, but I talked my way into being a restaurant critic.
How did you do that?
I got some advice from a guy, and I went into an editor, and I said, I ought to be your restaurant critic. And he said, I already have a restaurant critic. And I said, I'm better. That's sort of the story.
What do you mean, sort of the story?
Well, I there were some words that might not be best used on your show exchange during that conversation.
You mean you said something profane about their current restaurant critic?
Exactly.
And that got you hired?
And that got you hired?
Well, you know, arrogance can go a long way sometimes.
But, I mean, were you one of those people, and I'm assuming this was some years ago, that you were one of these young people who walked into a restaurant? And
no, this was 18 months ago.
Oh, my God, you've had a career. No, I mean, were you one of those people who would go into restaurants and turn up your nose? Oh, this plating is terrible. And you're like, dude, we're in a McDonald's. It's in a piece of paper.
Actually, this was almost 35 years ago. There was no such thing as plating. And the food in restaurants was so bad that I quickly converted the so-called restaurant reviewing column into a cooking column.
Really? So you found that you started cooking just because you didn't like the food you were getting in restaurants?
No, I started cooking because I didn't like the food I was getting at Clark University.
Really? Well, what was your first recipe back when you were a college student trying to learn to cook?
Well, actually, a friend I lived with and I took the rack out of the oven and placed it on top of the burners on the stove, took them on and grilled hamburgers on top of the stove, thus inventing the gas grill.
Wow, that was you.
That was us. Sadly, we didn't patent that.
Oh. Today.
And was that friend named George Foreman?
No, good, close.
And given all the cooking that you must do, you must have an amazing kitchen.
Well, I live in Manhattan, so... So I have a kitchen that's about 45 square feet, which, yeah, 7 by 7, like that.
Let's just say the hamburgers get grilled on top of the stove still.
Yeah. So you, I mean, I have looked through How to Cook Everything, which, how many recipes are in that book?
Well, something around 1,500.
1,500 recipes. And I'm assuming you made every one of those dishes, right?
Several times.
Did you find friends who would come over and eat all this food that you were making?
Well, people are always happy to eat food, yes.
That's true. Were people like hanging around your door going, what everything are you cooking today?
Shouldn't the book be called How to Cook Everything That Mark Bittman Could Pull Off?
That really is what it is.
Now, Mark, to me, you sound more like a real cook, more like an everyday guy than a chef or an artist or anything. Now, speaking as a guy who can't cook at all and who doesn't, I'm just a bachelor who eats out all the time. If I bought your book, could I just go in the kitchen and make a meal?
Yeah, you could start. I mean, I really am not a chef. I've never been a chef, and I don't even think I'm that good a cook, but I'm a pretty good cook, and the range of things you can produce being a pretty good cook is quite wide.
So, I mean, is there anything that you're spectacularly good at? Like, this is my specialty. It's like somebody important was coming over.
No, it's actually all kind of mediocre, but...
We're doing a hell of a job of selling your cookbooks, but go on.
But the level of expertise in home cooking has sunk so low that I've managed to kind of rise to the top.
There's a tone sometimes of exasperation in your recipes. Like, I make your pancake recipes sometimes for my kids, and you say, this is so simple, it's amazing people use a mix. Like, what's wrong with you fools?
Well, everything that we know as packaged and processed food has been invented in the last 100 years. Until that, all of those other humans cooked everything that they ate. So
right.
Were they so much smarter than us? I don't think so.
I mean, so they actually made their Oreos from scratch?
Exactly. That's exactly right, Peter, yes.
As a single dad at times in my life, that whole making a pancake and adding a couple ears on it,
that
was all I had.
Oh, yeah.
That was my number one move, so don't hate on that.
The ears are tricky, I'd agree.
The ears are a pain. Well, Mark Bittman, we're delighted to talk to you. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Holy Bittman, Batman!
We're sure this happens...
Wait, I thought this... What was the stuff we were doing until now?
Oh, no! That was just the amiable chat!
That was a formal interview.
Exactly. So, we're sure this happens to you a lot, with a name like Bittman being mistaken for the Caped Crusader, the world's greatest detective, the Dark Knight. So we're going to ask you three questions about Batman, specifically the movie... Batman and Robin. That was the one with George Clooney as Batman, and it is widely regarded as the very worst of all the modern Batman
films. Is that the one where Batman had nipples?
That is the one.
That answers the first question.
I am never inviting you back, Faith. Answer two questions correctly, and you'll win our prize.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And that's all I know about it.
Yeah, thank you, Faith.
I'm so sorry.
Well, we'll go through this anyway. Answer two questions correctly, and you'll win our prize from one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who is Mark Bittman playing for?
Mark is playing for Liana Malkowski of Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Now,
Wait. I win, and Liana gets Carl Castle's voice on her voicemail? What do I get?
You get the satisfaction of a job well done.
Carl, they told me I was going to do my voicemail.
I just left.
So the movie was horrifically panned by the critics when it came out, but one of the things that got fans especially angry was what? Was it A, Batman is shown sleeping while hanging upside down, B, sexy Catwoman was replaced by a character called Crazy Cat Lady, or C, nipples on the bat suits?
Guess I'll take a flyer with C.
You're really correct. Don't know how you could have known that, but yes, director Joel Schumacher said, quote, that he had no idea that putting nipples in the bat suit in Robin's suit was going to spark international headlines.
Wait, it wasn't their nipples, it was on the suit?
Yes.
So their nipples were hidden, but they put new nipples on the suit.
Exactly.
I might have to try that.
Yeah. So anyway, the making of featurette
that came with the Batman and Robin DVD is quite amazing. Among other things, it may be the only making-of featurette ever made that features what? A, a laugh track. B, an interview with an actor playing the lead actor, George Clooney, because George Clooney wanted nothing to do with it. Or C, a sincere apology from the movie's director.
You know, I don't really care what the right answer is, but I got to go with B because I just love that.
The idea that an actor played George Clooney talking about playing Batman because Clooney wouldn't do it?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
I
it's
would.
Right, isn't it?
No, it's actually the sincere apology from the director. Joel Schumacher.
Kind of the same thing.
Almost.
Really.
Schumacher says, quote, "If I disappointed fans in any way, I really want to apologize," unquote. So, last question. This is exciting. Thanks to Faith, you got one right. Schumacher says that part of the problem in making the movie was the studio pressure. He was told by the studio to make the movie more what? A, mega fun. B, toyetic, or C, crappy.
Has to be mega fun, doesn't it?
Mega fun? You think that they got the direction? Make this movie not just fun, but mega fun. They don't like it. Faith is shaking your
head. What do they think? They think crappy?
So you have choices, mega fun, toyetic, or crappy.
I told you, mega fun.
You're going to go for mega fun, even though the audience...
I don't care if you give me hints that I'm wrong. I think that's what it should be.
So you're going to... So despite...
Your brash, unfounded confidence worked to get you one job, and now it's your whole move.
It is. Your choice was mega fun. I'm sorry to say, a little bit, that it's wrong. The real answer was toyetic.
How could that be?
Because the movie studio wanted to make sure that the movie had the maximum number of possibilities to make and sell toys. Thus,
oh, toyetic.
What did you think I was saying?
I thought you were saying toyetic. I just was hung up on the megafun thing.
Megafun is sad. No, that's all. Carl, how did Mark Bittman do in our quiz?
He had one correct answer, but he needed at least two to win for Leanna Malkowski.
Oh, well.
Carl, come on.
Mark Bittman is the food columnist for the New York Times and the author of the fantastic How to Cook Everything cookbook, which I have used to make hollandaise sauce every Christmas for the last decade. His latest book is VB6, Vegan Before Six. Mark Bittman, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk to you, and take care.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
In just a minute, we're finding Nemo a tissue in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing reviews of local contractors, dentists, electricians, and mechanics to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. Carbonite, automatic and encrypted cloud backup solutions that provide access to backed up files from any device, carbonite.com, and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring with a Floor Finder app for iPad and iPhone. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Luke Burbank, Faith Saley, and Alonzo Bowden. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. In just a minute, Carl lays down some sick rhymes in the controversial new song, Accidental Limericist. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Alonzo, every year, the meat industry sells countless millions of pork chops, beef shoulders, tenderloins, other kinds of cuts of meat. Well, now they're making a big change intended to increase sales. What are they doing?
Lowering the price?
No.
I have no idea. What?
Taco
Bell decided to use real beef.
No. Because they already do, Taco Bell lawyers. They already do. I'll give you a hint. A steak by any other name would taste just as meat.
They're renaming it?
Yes, they're changing the names of all these cuts of meat. Meat producers are changing the names of over 350 cuts of meat, saying that the names are too confusing for customers. Oh, that must be why we eat so little meat in this country.
Mm-hmm. Who is confused by the term pork chop?
Oh, I'm always
what
confused. When I go to a steakhouse, I can never retain this. I always ask my husband to explain all the different cuts. The bone-in and filet mignon and never can remember.
If it says bone-in...
I don't eat them.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to help you with
enough.
This.
Let's go.
If it says bone-in...
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what they call it under the new name. But I'm going to go with that's the one that the bone is still in.
Right.
Yeah. It's too simple. There's like different kinds of pork chops. They're all called pork chops. So they're changing the names. They also want them to sound more attractive so they can charge more money. So something known as a pork butt today will be known as the Boston Roast from now on. There you go, Boston. You're a synonym for butt.
Or if you're west of the Mississippi, a Kardashian cut.
Yeah, that'll work. Alonzo, a hospital in Detroit has announced a huge advance in medical science. What?
Cheating death.
No. That's another hospital. That's in North Carolina. It's something, you know, you were in a hospital recently. Mm-hmm. It's something that you would have loved to have, I'm betting.
Decent food.
Close. Well, not close, but the other thing that everybody complains about in hospitals. Especially if you have to get up and walk down the hall.
Oh, gowns that actually close?
Yes! They've invented a hospital gown that actually covers your backside. The worst part about going to the hospital is having to wear these open back gowns. Thankfully, students at Detroit's Henry Ford Hospital have been working tirelessly for 2.5 years to create a less butt-exposing gown. It's made of thicker, warmer material. It features a fold-over back that provides both access for the doctors and coverage. It has a double-breasted front, making it perfect for the hospital prom. Reviews have been overwhelmingly positive, and it's been deemed the best attempt of covering an ass since the New York Times did 10 pages on Anthony Weiner. Faith, during a recent trip to Germany, Russian President Vladimir Putin was interrupted when a topless female protester rushed the stage. Instead of flinching or running away, Putin did what?
Oh. Did he do something kind to her?
He did something approving.
He looked at her toplessness. He gave it a once or twice over.
He did, and he registered his approval by doing what?
Oh, by two thumbs up.
Yes, he did. That's what he did. All right. Security moved quickly to intercept the woman as she rushed the stage with a slogan written on her bare back, but not before Putin nodded approvingly and requested a private lap protest. The Randy Russian, this is true, gave the woman two thumbs up, prompting Roger Ebert to sue him from heaven.
It's actually the photos of this moment are sort of great because she's approaching him, and he's obviously a person who has a huge security detail, and their job is to make sure to get in the way of anyone who's coming at him in an unexpected fashion. And they're trying to block the lady, and he's kind of being like, oh, give it a minute. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
He's the most unthreatened world leader who has someone running at them you've ever seen.
He was so distracted by her nakedness that not only did he have no idea what she was protesting, he couldn't remember afterwards anything else about her. To quote Putin, I didn't make out if they were blonde, chestnut-haired, or brunette. Our question is, what is the they in that sentence?
That's so strange.
Do you think George Bush was reading that story saying, they threw shoes at me?
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and our show later this summer on August 29th at Tanglewood in Lenox, Massachusetts. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Manny Lowe from Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh, Oxford, Mississippi.
Yes.
And what do you do there?
I'm the program manager for the First Tech Challenge robotics competition for the state, working at the Center for Mathematics and Science Education at the university.
My daughter has done robotics competitions at the junior high school level, and they're so much fun. These are the competitions where teams of kids are supposed to build robots from a set of parts that can perform a task.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. The task that was assigned to my daughter's class was to become sentient and rise up and kill all the humans.
We're still working on that.
Well, Manny, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly two times, you'll be a big winner. Ready to go?
Ready to go.
Here is your first limerick.
In this fish sneeze, a shark has been caught. It is thin and strong. Check out this knot. Folks won't rebuke us for using fish mucus. Skip spider silk. Use this fish
snot.
Yes, indeed. So, is wearing clothes made from what comes out of a silkworm's behind not disgusting enough for you? Well, thanks to scientists in New Zealand, we've got the next big thing, fabric made from the snot of the hagfish. It's good there's a use for it, because there's nothing more annoying than a hagfish with a cold. Wherever you are right now, no matter how bad your job is, know that somewhere there's a guy whose job title is Fish Snot Harvester.
Who was the person who even thought, yeah, let's look there?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's true.
Let's not waste that.
Yeah. Here is your next limerick.
Since I'm lazy, this job is a keeper. No distractions by cell phone or beeper. It's just 8 hours rest. That's the thing I do best. I've become a professional
sleeper.
Yes! The Finn Hotel in Helsinki is seeking a, quote, professional sleeper.
Hold on. I'm writing this down.
To test its beds and rooms for comfort for a period of 35 nights. It does sound like a dream job, but do not let your boss catch you awake in your bed.
I'm just thinking that this isn't a real job. This is just someone, like an executive at the Finn Hotel, wanted to put someone in the family on the payroll.
Exactly.
He's like, all right, you'll be a sleeper. Get in there, and we'll just slip some cash to you every week. Just get mom off my back.
Here's your last limerick.
Blow the hair out and curl it like noodles. Feed them steroids and stuff them with strudels. You can't sell a ferret just on its own merit, so let's groom them and sell them as
poodle.
Yes, poodle! You know what it's like. You meet a nice poodle. You talk. You do a little petting. You get home. It turns out she's a ferret. An Argentinian market was selling poodles and chihuahuas that owners have realized were actually ferrets on steroids. And this is the only time you'll ever hear the phrase on steroids, meaning on steroids. They gave them the steroids to help them grow to more poodle-like size. And watch out, because there's no roid rage like ferret roid rage.
That has to be the dumbest customer. I mean, that you know something? If you're good enough to sell someone a ferret as a poodle, you should be allowed to keep their money.
Just on the principle of that.
That is the ultimate con. There are Nigerians looking at that saying, wow.
Carl, how did Manny do in our quiz?
Manny, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations, Manny, and thanks for playing.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you.
How much is that job? the window. The one with the wagony chair.
Now it is time for our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Alonzo Bowden and Faith Saley both have 3 points. Luke Burbank has 2.
Luke, you're definitely going to go third, so let's get started with you. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Senator Tim Johnson of South Dakota changed his position and announced his support of blank on Monday.
Gay marriage.
Right. After avoiding a filibuster on Thursday, the Senate began a debate on reducing blank violence.
Gun.
Right. Even though it's not in the U.S., this week the CDC activated its emergency center to work on a cure for the new strain of blank found in China.
Bird flu.
Right. Best known for her colorful print dresses, fashion designer Blank died last Sunday at age 81.
Pulitzer.
Right. After 17 months on the job, the CEO of department store chain Blank was ousted, and the old CEO was rehired.
JCPenney's.
Right. A study out this week finds that in a comparison of Xbox, Wii, and PlayStation gamers, Xbox players are the blank.
Most addicted.
No. They are the best in bed.
Did you hear that, yeah,
that
shock?
That gasp was from some woman married to Xbox players. Apparently, in this study, which must have had a very small statistical sample, guys who play Xboxes rank the highest in the bedroom. In another unrelated study, Xbox owners were found to lie more than owners of other consoles. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Luke has taken the lead.
Well done. All right, then. So, we flipped a coin. Faith has elected to go next. Fill in the blank. Beloved Mouseketeer and beach movie star Blank died Monday at age 70.
Annette Funicello.
Right. Beyonce and Jay-Z came under fire this week for their 5th wedding anniversary trip to Blank.
Cuba.
Right. This week, Mark Zuckerberg launched a new organization to advocate for Blank reform.
Immigration.
Right. Michael Bloomberg is probably not happy with a new study out this week that shows that limiting Blank size just causes people to buy more.
Sugary soda.
Right. Everything was going great for a man robbing a bank in Florida until he blanked.
Until he put his gun down and the teller took it.
That's exactly what happened. He needed the free hand, he put the gun down, and the teller said, oh, hey. Pointed it out. Former Vice President Dick Cheney this week warned that when it comes to North Korea, quote, we're in blank.
Deep doo-doo.
Right. The Cleveland Indians home opener went on as planned this week, despite the fact that the Indians manager blanked before the game.
Died?
No. He got lost heading to the stadium.
Oh,
Terry Francona, former manager of the Red Sox, lives 2 blocks from the Cleveland Stadium, and yet he got lost walking there. He says, quote, I got lost 3 times. An Indians employee in a golf cart eventually found Francona and whisked him back to the stadium. Then in the 6th inning of the game, he set out for the pitcher's mound to put in a reliever and was never seen again. Carl, how did Faith do on our quiz?
Faith had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Faith has taken the lead.
All right. So how many, then, does Alonzo need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right. Here we go, Alonzo, for the game. In a big win Monday night, the Louisville Cardinals came back from a 12-point deficit to beat Michigan for the blank title.
NCAA championship.
Right. On Wednesday, President Obama presented Congress with his proposal for the 2014 blank.
Budget.
Yes. A study by the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency on Thursday said that blank may have nuclear weapons that could be mounted on missiles.
North Korea.
Right. Now that it has successfully completed new tests, United plans to fly Boeing's blank planes in May.
787.
Right. The Dreamliner. A tortoise that disappeared from its display in a museum in Dubuque, Iowa, was found days later blanking.
Sleeping?
No, riding down the elevator in the museum. It almost made it. Because of increasingly aggressive gangs of pickpockets, the world's most visited museum, the Blank in Paris, was temporarily closed.
The Louvre.
Right. After he was accused of pushing a toddler in Times Square, a man dressed as Blank was arrested and then released on bail.
Superman?
Cookie Monster. A British couple says their pet hamster is recovering after blanking over the Easter weekend.
Disguising himself as a ferret.
No. The hamster is doing fine after coming back from the dead and digging itself out of its grave.
And it is pissed.
Really? It's like an EC horror comic for rodents.
Do you know how hard you'd apologize to a hamster that rose from the dead on Easter?
Yeah. a good point. I hadn't thought about the religious aspect of it. So this is what happens. So Tink the hamster is found lying face up in its cage or whatever. And the hamster sitter who was taking care of it says, oh my God, the hamster died. And he buried Tink in a toilet paper roll and buried it in the garden, as one does. But that night, Tink woke up, chewed through his paper towel shroud and clawed his way out of the grave. Tink was found waiting the next morning, cold and angry and with an unquenchable hunger for little brains.
I wonder if there was a little bit of toilet paper left on the toilet paper roll, and there's like a little shroud of Turin of Tink's face.
Carl, did Alonzo do well enough to win?
He needed at least 6 to tie, but Alonzo had 5 correct answers for 13 points. So with 15 points, Faith Saley is this week's champion.
Well done. In just 1 minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict, should he decide to run for mayor of New York, what will be Anthony Weiner's campaign slogan. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and RDO, a digital music service allowing listeners to discover millions of songs and listen everywhere. RDIO.com. Ally Bank, who believes intelligent news and knowledgeable customer service should be available around the clock. Learn more at AllyBank.com. Progressive, offering policyholders the option to bundle home and auto insurance coverage. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. And Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, benevolent, mostly overlord. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks, our house manager is Don Hall, our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green, our intern is Miles Blame It on the Dorn Bossa Nova. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Stolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer, Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be Anthony Weiner's campaign slogan? Alonzo Bowden.
Anthony Weiner, more than meets the eye.
Faith Saley.
He's back because you can't keep a good wiener down.
And Luke Burbank.
Wait, did I hit reply all? Damn it!
Well, if Anthony Weiner does any of those slogans, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Alonzo Bowden, Faith Saley, and Luke Burbank. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. Is NPR.
Support for WPLN comes from Lipscomb University's Department of Biology, now offering a Master of Biomolecular Science through evening classes, accepting applications now for the May 28 cohort. More at biology.lipscomb.edu. Nashville Ballet presents Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's tale of a love so powerful that nothing could contain it, not feuding families, not youth, not even life itself. Live music from the Nashville Symphony, action-packed sword fighting will transport the audience to fair Verona in this grand-scale production. Romeo and Juliet, April 27th through the 29th at TPAC's Jackson Hall. Tickets are available at 782-4040 or online at nashvilleballet.com.
This is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML, Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS, Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.